You're listening to CIOE FM 97.5.
Welcome to the Nova Scotia Artist Spotlight, presented by the Nova Scotia Talent Trust on CIOE. I'm your host, Bree McKinnon, a songwriter, pianist, and former Talent Trust Award recipient. For this series, we're celebrating the 75th anniversary of the Talent Trust by interviewing some of the amazing, groundbreaking artists that we've supported here in Nova Scotia. You can listen on 97.5 or streaming worldwide online at www.communityradio.ca. On today's Artist Spotlight, we're featuring the amazing violinist Mark Jokic, who I'll be speaking with a little bit later on. But first up, we have Garrett Pawn, an amazing actor, producer, and founder of Rebel Road Films. He's had recurring roles in Haven, Forgive Me, and AMC's Emmy-nominated series The Killing, and was just awarded a place in the National Screen Institute Features First program. In 2017, Garrett was the recipient of the prestigious Nova Scotia Talent Trust Canada Games Young Artist of Excellence Award, as well as the Sheila McKenzie Filmmaking Award. Garrett, thank you so much for hopping on the phone.
Thank you for having me. I'm so glad we finally were able to connect.
I know. Your schedule is crazier than mine, so I'm glad I caught you at a good time. So first off, you've had an absolutely incredible year. Congratulations on your success. But I kind of just want to talk about where your journey started. And I know that you started working in the film world while you were completing your commerce degree at Dalhousie. So how did that all come about?
Well, I started off acting when I was 16 in school plays and school musicals. And I got some kind of good feedback from those performances. And so after high school, when everyone was thinking about like, oh, I'm going to be a doctor, or I'm going to be a lawyer, or, you know, I decided that I wanted to try my hand at just focusing on acting. So I saved up a bit of money and moved out to Vancouver, where I got an agent pretty quickly. And then I just started doing the actor thing where, you know, you're serving tables, you're working at bars, and you're just trying to make a go of it. And I was really fortunate to be surrounded by people who taught me a lot. And so I think, I booked a couple things that were really, really great for my career. And then I guess I just kind of hit a wall, with feeling like when you're an actor, there's so much that is out of your control in terms of your trajectory as an artist, because you're relying on so many other people to say yes. And I wanted to create opportunities for myself and also be a little bit more involved in all aspects of filmmaking and storytelling. So it kind of worked out perfectly when my mom bought this lamb farm in Antigonish. And she had no experience lamb farming, and it was summer, and I thought that sounded like the most, romantic idea to go work on this lamb farm for a couple months and just figure out what I want to do next. And then that led me to kind of just feeling like I wanted to go back to school. And if with kind of an eye in producing, I felt like I didn't have the skills, like the financial and mathematical and even organizational skills at that point to even consider applying for a job in production. So I kind of just went back to school, did a co-op based program at Dow, and that kind of got my foot in the door at a documentary production company where they really gave me a lot of responsibility quickly. And so I just like worked my way up, very fast there. And within like a year, I was producing and production managing a 13 half hour wildlife series for our network while still full time in university, which was nuts. I don't recommend that, but And then I went to the CFC right after school, and I felt like I was kind of moving more towards a documentary wildlife kind of sphere with my work experience, and wanted to navigate back towards scripted narrative filmmaking, which is my true love.
Wow. I've seen some of your work as an actor, and it's amazing. So it's cool that you kind of work in front of and behind the lens. It must be such different sets of skills. So do you kind of prefer one over the other these days?
I definitely prefer producing. I think they are different sets of skills, but I know that my acting background makes me a stronger producer. Mm-hmm. And I think now my producing knowledge will make me a stronger actor, because I think just the more involved you can be in the filmmaking process and knowing more about just storytelling through the art of filmmaking, it's, you know, they aren't siloed. Mm-hmm. They kind of feed into each other. And, but right now I'm definitely focused on producing, and I have responsibility to, the writers and the directors that I'm working with to really give that my full attention right now. And I take that pretty seriously.
I guess the two sort of complement and enhance each other.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's so much about producing that I think people don't understand if they're not in the industry. There's so many creative decisions that you make in a run of a day that I think that my knowledge of character and of, you know, arc and beats and just even like breaking down scenes, that I'm more prepared to give valuable notes to the writers that I'm working with on new drafts, or, you know, even like figuring out which projects that I am attracted to. Part of those decisions, I think, come from an actor's point of view. It's like, well, what projects would an actor want to be a part of? Hmm. And, you know, and what characters as an actor would I want to play? And I look for that in material.
Hmm. Well, speaking of mm-hmm. production, I know you're co-producing Spirit Talker, a documentary series currently in development. Can you tell me a little bit about that project and where it came from?
Yeah, it's so it's currently in production, and we've been in production since mid-February. And it's a 13-episode documentary series for APTN that follows Mi'kmaq medium Sean Leonard, who is from Cole Harbour. And, well, he lives in Cole Harbour now, but his ancestral home is Con River, Newfoundland. And he's going to 13 different indigenous communities in the Maritimes to use his ability to connect with spirit to help people heal and bring hope and kind of help people move through the grieving process. And while he's doing that, he's also reconnecting to his Mi'kmaq culture. So there's a really big aspect of the show that we're learning about what makes these individual communities both unique and so tied to the fabric of Mi'kmaq or Maliseet culture. It's very interesting.
Wow. Where did this come from? Like, what drew you to this project?
It came from a friend of Sean's who's a documentary series writer in Halifax. Her name's Donna Gabriel. And she knows Sean very well and has gone to a couple of his live shows. And she works with my co-producer, Edward Pyle, at Telltale quite a bit. And so I guess I've been focusing a lot on developing just focusing on indigenous stories, specifically Mi'kmaq stories, in part because it's very easy to say, like, certain factions of society have been underrepresented on film, but I actually take it a step back farther than that, and I try to put myself in an audience's point of view, and I think that when I go on Netflix, and I'm going to any of these streaming sites, or if I'm putting on TV, I am so bored by 90% of the content because I've seen it before. And I think that indigenous stories and these underrepresented stories they should be focused on, and they should be produced and told right now from also an audience's perspective of seeing something different and going into a world that both feels familiar and unknown. And I don't know, I've been so, I guess, both curious and there's an aspect of it that's I'm reconnecting at the same time through working on these projects. And so when the project came to me, Spirit Talker came to me, I kind of jumped on it right away because I'm kind of just directly aligned with what I wanted to see as a viewer and what I want to be a part of as a producer.
Wow, definitely so many important stories to tell that kind of haven't been touched on before. So good for you for exploring that kind of fertile area. It sounds really incredible.
Thank you. Yeah, I think I'm excited for people to see them.
So we're just going to play some music really quickly. Is there one particular song you've been listening to a lot lately or are inspired by?
Well, I have to tell this, like, I'll try to keep this story short, but for, so over the last 36 hours, I've had 2 hours of sleep. And the reason is because I was shooting an episode of Spirit Talker in Yarmouth, and we were there for National Indigenous Peoples Day at Acadia First Nation. And then we did a drum making workshop. So yesterday was our day off, and I knew I was coming to Toronto. I'm in Toronto right now, 11 a.m. And last night it was my friend's birthday. And so it was like this one, I'm on the road so often, there's one perfect time where I got to see my friend when, you know, it's on his birthday. And then I get to the bar, all roads lead to the Seahorse, and I realize that I don't have my ID. And I've left it in Yarmouth. And so at 1:30 in the morning, I'm like, what am I going to do? I have this flight. There's no way that, like, I can get on it because my passport's expired. And within that moment, this is not an exaggeration, in that same moment, the universe sent me the exact person that could help me. And it was this childhood best friend who I've just, like, recently reconnected with. And I told her my situation, and she was like, oh, let's just drive to Yarmouth right now. Let's go right now, and we'll just drive back, and we'll make it happen. And so that's what we did. And the one song that kind of kept us up was Fleetwood Mac's The Chain. And so I want to play The Chain right now and devote it to her and how she helped me out so much in the last, like, 36 hours.
Well, I'm extra thankful that we could connect today, knowing what a journey it took for you to get to Toronto. So let's have a listen to The Chain by Fleetwood Mac.
Listen to the wind blow. 97.5 FM, the voice of East Coast music, streaming live at communityradio.ca.
Welcome back to the Artist Spotlight. I'm Bria McKinnon, and I'm speaking with Garrett Pond today. Garrett, welcome back.
Thank you.
So I know your company is working on a new project called Wildhood, an Indigenous identity drama from writer-director Breton Hannum, who is also a Nova Scotia Talent Trust recipient. Can you tell me a little bit more about this project?
Sure, yeah. I've been developing, I've known Brett since I was, I guess 16 years old when we first met, and I acted in his first short film. He was at NASCAD. And so we've had this great working relationship over, God, how many years is that? It's too many. And when I was going to the CFC, I reached out to Brett to see what scripts he was kind of working on. And Wildhood was one of them. And Wildhood follows the story of a two-spirit teenager who grows up in this kind of white, abusive family situation. He's never known his mother, and he's been made to believe that she's been dead his entire life by his kind of white, alcoholic father. And she's Indigenous, and so that aspect of himself and his culture, he's never explored or had the opportunity to connect with. And so he finds his box of birthday cards that she's been sending him every year, but that his father has been keeping from him. And he basically torches his father's truck, takes his 10-year-old half-brother Travis, and they go on a road trip across Nova Scotia to try to find her. And along the way, they meet a powwow dancer who kind of helps along their journey, and slowly kind of Link gets a deeper understanding of where his place is within his people.
Wow, that sounds so interesting. So I'm not too familiar with the film world, but how long does a project like that take from inception to the release date? Like, what's the plan for the release of this project?
So there's not really a typical amount of time that it can take a film to develop. I know Brett was working on the project for at least 2.5 years before I came on, and I've had it now for 2 years. So we're looking to go into production, if everything lines up, most likely next June. And I guess we'd look for a release like the following year.
Wow. I can't wait to see it. That sounds awesome.
Yeah. It's a really, really beautiful script, and it's in part based on Brett's own experience. And so it comes from a very personal space. And it's one that I think will help in kind of reconciling people together and bring people together to appreciate aspects of cinema or parts of cinema that they don't normally get to see through characters that everyone can relate to.
Yeah, another kind of story that hasn't really been told as often as it should. So that's really great that you're tackling that subject matter.
Yeah.
So I know I just mentioned in the intro you were awarded some Nova Scotia Talent Trust Awards, and they've kind of helped you get to where you are. So how did you hear about the Talent Trust, and where were you at career-wise when you thought, okay, I'm going to apply for these awards?
I was just finished university, and I had been accepted into the Canadian Film Center Producers Lab. And I was trying to figure out how am I going to afford to live for the next 6 months, because you're not allowed to work when you're going to the CFC. It's just too much. It's too demanding. So I was just trying to figure out how I was going to possibly make that work. Toronto is an expensive city, and I'd just been in school, so I had no savings. And I think someone within the industry kind of pointed me towards the Talent Trust and felt like felt like what I was about to do at the CFC would be in line with kind of the pillars of what the talent trusts are kind of based on. Mm-hmm. And so I applied and was pretty successful. And then the awards were just like a crazy, crazy bonus.
Sometimes the right thing just comes along right at the right moment when you need it.
Oh my God. I remember, I think it was Thanksgiving when the emails were sent out about the awards. And I know I opened the email while I was in bed and was kind of like half sleeping. And so I didn't really check the attachment. And then like multiple hours later, I then checked in and I was like, oh my God, like, holy shit, this is going to change everything. It was so important. I needed it so badly in that moment. And it was just, the universe kind of sends you things when you need them most.
Yep. And it sounds like you took that gift and really ran with it. And it's really put you
absolutely
on an amazing path. So if you were going to give advice to young artists who are just now applying for their first talent trust scholarships and embarking on their career, what would you say?
Ooh, that's a good question. Applying to the talent trust, I would say it's always good. And I put myself included in this list of just like reach out to people that have been successful in getting talent trust support. And, you know, meet for coffee and just ask, you know, if they can review applications. I think that's always a really important thing. There's an art to like grant writing that that takes practice. And so if you can reach out to anyone who's already done it, I highly recommend that. And if you don't get it first time, just keep applying and just like, between applications, make sure that you're just constantly developing your craft. Constantly develop your craft. It's so important. You can't just wait for someone else to give you an opportunity. You have to, you just have to be working at it. Just work at it.
That's great advice. So one last question before we finish things off here. I know personally as an artist, it can be really difficult to make this a career in the creative industries, but what gets you through the low points, waiting for the highs to come back around again?
Any Ryan Gosling movie.
That is the best answer to that question I've ever asked.
I have such a man crush on Ryan Gosling. And anybody who knows me knows it's true. No, but I think it's really important for anybody, whether you're young or old, to put some time into like developing a support system, whether it's with other creative people or it's your family or it's through exercise or whatever it is, that in those low points you can look to, that you don't need validation. It's just support. Because I think it's really important for artists to obviously be validated, but there's that validation. It's just such a tricky. It's a game. It's a dance, and it's not going to come around all the time. And so I think if you can find another outlet, whether it's even just going for walks in the woods or paddling or just something else to clear your head and to rebuild your energy so that you can just go back at it harder and better and just keep with it, stay with the game.
Wow, I agree 100%. That's great advice. So thank you so much, Garrett. I really, really appreciate you taking the time to talk to me, and I cannot wait to see the projects you have coming out in the next couple of years. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
We're going to play Overnight by Maggie Rogers to cap off this interview. I'm Bree McKinnon, and you're listening to The Artist Spotlight, presented by the Nova Scotia Talent Trust. This is Overnight by Maggie Rogers.
I remember way back, late night throwback, sitting on the front lawn talking when I lost it. And though I lost it, I remember you saying you would come back, run back, find me on the front porch like that, but you waited. So I got wasted, and I've always said I'd never let myself. Hold on this long, 'cause people change overnight. Things get strange, but I'm alright. I'm still here, and I'm still high, and I'll still meet you in the middle of the night. But if you lie to me, lie to me, lie to me, I'm gone. I still wonder if I called you, what would I do? Leave it too long, voicemail that I hate and then erase it, like I planned it. And I wonder if I still lived in the city, would I see you at a party, take a big sip of my whiskey and then leave quickly and pray you missed me. And though I still know exactly how this ends, I keep holding on, 'cause people change overnight. Things get strange, but I'm alright. I'm still here, and I'm still high, and I'll still meet you in the middle of the night. You know I'll meet you in the middle of the night. But if you lie to me, I'm gone.
I'm speaking with Mark Jokic, a former Nova Scotia Talent Trust recipient, as well as the recent winner of the prestigious Prix Goyer Classical Music Award. Mark has appeared as a soloist with some of Canada's top orchestras, such as the Toronto Symphony Orchestra, the National Arts Centre Orchestra, as well as in chamber music festivals at home and across North America. Mark, welcome.
Thanks very much.
Thanks for calling me up today from Montreal. I appreciate you taking the time out of your busy schedule.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
So you've since become one of Canada's most prolific and in-demand violinists, but growing up in Nova Scotia, I'm just curious how you heard about the Nova Scotia Talent Trust in the first place.
Well, a lot of musicians, you know, talks amongst each other. So, where there is help or financial assistance to, you know, pursue, especially at that age, educational organizations like music camps or schools or things like that, programs for music. All that really financially adds up. So a lot of musicians seek support for that. And that's where I learned about it. And of course, over the years, I've received a lot of assistance from Nova Scotia Talent Trust, and my most formative years of studying the violin. So it's had a wonderful impact, and I'm very glad that I heard about it, and I hope that a lot of promising young musicians in that area in Nova Scotia do know about this great organization and pass on the word.
Yeah, well, we're trying to get the word out with this. So when you were receiving these scholarships and just kind of spending your formative years working on your craft here, what did you think you wanted to do in music, and where did you sort of envision your career going?
Of course, every musician's different. Some musicians think to themselves, "Oh, I'm going to do this, and I want to end up doing that." For me, I just you know, because learning an instrument is so time consuming, you just think, I just want to play as well as I can possibly play, especially when you start picking up momentum and you realize that, you know, this is something that you're good at. So I envision myself in my, you know, consider my professional life being a professional musician. Of course, you know, you're in school, you're studying many different subjects, so you're always open to things. But especially at, you know, my teenage years, you know, I really wanted to stick to what I was good at. And, you know, sports wasn't one of them, of course. So, in terms of academia, you know, that was just for an all-rounded education. And that was, you know, I felt it was important to have, you know, a well-rounded education. But at the same time, you know, what I could really apply myself to and, you know, what really had kind of the strongest case for me to pursue was the violin. So, yeah, I mean, I really saw myself performing, playing with other musicians, how I would make a living and, you know, livelihood off of that didn't really cross my mind until, you know, probably the close to the end of my, you know, university years. So that's really how focused I was. And that is the case for a lot of other musicians.
Yeah, you kind of figure out the practicalities of the career as you go. It's the passion that comes first,
I guess. Yeah, and so sometimes you don't want to think about it because, you know, it's so wonderful to play an instrument and do music. But, you know, at the same time, I didn't stress about it. I was able to really focus and enjoy it and love it. And I think having those memories of that, instead of really stressing about it, really gave me a more positive outlook now. So now when I perform and play, I barely get nervous. I do it because I love it. And having those memories of that was really important, I think.
Really interesting.
And that's another important thing about these organizations like Nova Scotia Talent Trust. It takes kind of the financial worry about, you know, especially if you're going to a music camp, about, you know, how can I pay the tuition here? You know, it's amazing how much of a stress relief that can be.
Yeah, it's super important at those initial phases when you're just building that passion before you can build the career aspect.
Exactly.
I've read interviews where you talk about giving master classes and the importance of music education. Did you have one particular mentor growing up that helped shape your career or kind of inspired you to begin on this path?
Oh, well, I mean, obviously my father, who is a violinist, Philippe Djokic. I mean, even as a you know, youngster, preteen, I was actually going to some of this, they call them studio classes at Dalhousie. So once a week, all the violinists or all the musicians of one instrument will get together and they'll all play for each other. They'll all listen to each other perform. The teacher will make comments and then the students will make critiques as well to their colleagues. And it's kind of a way to critically listen to other musicians and to almost, you could say, practice teaching, you know, because there's certain little technical aspects of playing that you can, you know, see right away or hear. So, you know, my dad exposed me to this early on, which is great. And I also got to see my dad teach. So I, after seeing this and years of it, you know, I really thought to myself, you know, I want to be able to teach and give master classes someday. And, you know, it's really a skill that you pick up along the way. So yeah, my dad was definitely a mentor, not only in terms of violin performance, but also, you could say violin education and, instructing and things like that. So, yeah, it was definitely, he played a very important role. And later on, some of my teachers through my university years, like David Russell, Don Weilerstein, Jamie Laredo, studying with many different teachers, also gave you, you know, every teacher has a different approach to teaching. So you pick up on all these different angles. You know, some teachers demonstrate, you know, what is the better way to play by playing it themselves, or some actually put it into words and, you know, don't demonstrate on the instrument. So you kind of pick up a vocabulary of teaching as well.
Yeah, I guess that's a good way to get over stage fright as well, going to master classes from that young age and kind of being peer reviewed and seeing other people play. That's an interesting experience.
Just getting used to being around people with your instrument is instead of cooped up in a practice room.
Mm-hmm. That's the best way to learn.
This practice room's great, but not too much of it. So, yeah.
And this is just kind of a question out of my own selfish curiosity, but I'm from Cape Breton. So growing up on the East Coast, where there's such a strong tradition of traditional fiddle music, were you ever experimenting with that growing up or influenced by that as you were learning classical violin?
Well, my first answer would be actually it's more of a question. Some people ask me, what's the difference between a fiddle and a violin? And there's actually really no difference. You know, it's more the style of playing, which kind of brings me to, the fact that the violin or fiddle is such a popular instrument in the Maritimes. Mm-hmm. So I think that because of that, the other musicians are very open to sharing each other's styles or traditions of music playing. So yes, I was exposed to quite a few fiddlers and fiddle music, especially during my years at the Nova Scotia Youth Orchestra. Because we had, I think, people like Buddy McMaster come and play with us. And we also had Scott McMillan come work with us with some other guest artists, sometimes some young fiddlers as well. And funny enough, later on, actually, only a few years ago, kind of towards the end of their career, I played with a group called Bowfire. And we actually toured. And Bowfire was actually a 7-piece violin group with a band, like 4-piece band. And so what we did was we played rock tunes, classical music, and we also played fiddle tunes. So I actually, at one point in my career, was actually playing some popular fiddle tunes across North America.
Wow.
And so I'm kind of glad I had, it was like a violin super show, cross genre violin super show. And having that experience really helped me out. So, yes, I have done fiddle music in Nova Scotia and never thought I'd, have a few concerts playing it, but I actually did. So I'm glad I did it.
Cool. So who else was in Bowfire?
Well, it was started by a very famous, one of Canada's most famous jazz violinist, Lenny Solomon. And it was a huge success. I mean, they toured, I remember them touring back, I think, from like the 90s through 2000s. And I joined probably around like 2014 or something like that, 2013. And it was, there were a bunch of other great fiddlers and violinists that played in this group at one point or time. You know, some violinists went, joined and left, and they had probably some of the greatest violinists play in that group and some of the greatest jazz musicians. And it was very impressive. Worth looking up.
To check out a Bowfire show. That sounds incredible.
Yeah, well, I don't think they play anymore, but they have a huge online presence still. I mean, there's tons of things you can listen to. And if not, definitely check out Lenny Solomon as a jazz violinist. He's quite something. So
put that on the list. Well, now that we've talked about different styles that you've played, I would love to play a piece from your Solo 7 album, Dance Number 4. Can you tell me a little bit about that piece, Mark?
Oh, yeah. Dance Number 4 is by a well-known composer here in Canada, Anna Sokolovic, who also has a similar background to me, which is Serbian roots. Mm. And this particular piece sounds a little bit abstract, but it's actually, as she described it, is supposed to be in the style of an improvisation, much like maybe a gypsy violinist would play. You know, sometimes songs are passed down through tradition, and sometimes you can take certain melodic liberties with it. So it's it's a short piece. It's very kind of fast and can say sporadic, but it has a lot of improvisation elements to it. So if you think of it that way, then it's really an interesting work. It's very very energetic, and I love playing it because it really kind of keeps you on your toes.
Well, let's have a listen to Dance Number 4 by Mark Jokic.
Thank you. Hey, turn it up. This is Guy Paul Thibault on CIOE 97.5 Community Radio.
That was dance number 4 from the album Solo 7 by Mark Jokic. Welcome back, Mark.
Thank you.
So in addition to performing solo, I know you've collaborated with artists in many different configurations, ranging from a duo with a percussionist to a trio featuring a theremin player. So what draws you to performing in some of these more experimental combinations?
Oh, yeah. It's kind of a bit of luck and also searching for musicians as well. You know, I never would have thought I would have been playing with a theremin player had I not met him at a music festival in Ottawa called the Music and Beyond Festival. So we ended up playing together at this festival organized by the festival. So they actually put us together along with a few other musicians, and we actually stayed in touch. And, you know, fast forward a couple of years, we're playing for the second time in Geneva this summer with really wonderful pianist, basically it you kind of grow into it. You don't know what to expect when you first come together and kind of what the style of the instrument is like. So you kind of learn as you go. And in other cases, some of the collaborations I've done, especially on this my most recent CD, which is a collection of music by French-Canadian composer André Mathieu. We actually collaborated together, a bunch of friends and I, at this music festival called Festival Classica here in the South Shore of Montreal. And it was actually the festival that organized us to record the CD, because it was of music that hadn't been recorded too much. And it was to really celebrate the composer and also the performance at this festival. So it's really kind of interesting how some of these collaborations come together. Some is by luck, some is by circumstance, some is by, you know, you really want to play with this instrumentalist. And I enjoy all different situations of coming together like that. So the more the merrier.
Cool. I was watching some of your videos online, and I saw the series where you shot 45 music videos in iconic Canadian places with different configurations of artists around the country, one of which looks like it's a brewery on the Halifax waterfront, which I thought was pretty cool and not a place you would typically expect to hear classical music. So what was that project like?
Oh, well, yeah, I mean, definitely going across Canada and performing in different locations, I thought it was really interesting because of how willing a lot of these businesses and locations were to open up their doors to us and say to us, sure, yeah, go film in our business or our attraction. So definitely to learn how friendly everyone was across the country. Of course, I already knew that, but especially in celebration of Canada's 150th, you know, people were really, really open to those things. I chose that particular bar. I don't think it actually, I think it's under a different name now, but I mean, it's still kind of a bar and restaurant, but definitely filming in Halifax on the waterfront at a popular, you could say watering hole, I think was kind of iconic because I, you know, I grew up from my legal drinking age, you know, going down there with friends and, you know, having a good time. And I actually made that particular video with my parents, who are both musicians. Mom plays piano, father plays violin, my sister plays cello. And actually going down there, sitting with them and having a good time, you know, years later, come back to Halifax. I think that was something really cool to capture on video. And you do see actually a lot of families going down there and hanging out and having a great time. And that's definitely a Halifax vibe. So I really wanted to give that with that video. And it's also a great keepsake, you know, to maybe show my kids one day, you know, here's me playing with, you know, my parents, you know, and it's preserved in video.
Oh, so that's amazing. I didn't realize that when I was watching it, that it was a family affair, but that makes it even more interesting.
Yeah. And especially like after concerts, like, you know, no musician is not going to go out for a drink. So that's definitely also, you know, an important thing to kind of capture is, musicians in audiences hanging out, you know, after concerts. That's why music's good for the economy, because it gets people out of their homes and into the downtown area and supports local businesses. So you get a lot of that from concerts and musicians. So
Absolutely. Here in Nova Scotia, for sure. It's a big draw, I'd say.
Hopefully I said that with my music. I couldn't put any text on the screen. Like, and I really wanted to have the words, "You see what's happening here," flashing on the screen.
I think I took that away from the glass of beer in front of every musician and the kind of kitchen party vibe, although it was classical music. It was a cool mashup. Mm-hmm. So if you could, speaking of collaboration, if you could perform or collaborate with any artist, living or dead, who would that be?
Any artist, living or dead, who would that be? I think I would probably collaborate with a number of heavy metal bands, or the many genres of metal bands, because I think it'd be kind of cool. Sometimes like there's one band from actually Switzerland called Celtic Frost, and sometimes they have featured, you know, symphonic instruments like a French horn and strings in some of their music. And I thought that would always be something that's really, really cool to do. Actually, I know a lot of metal bands out of Sweden and Finland actually include strings in some of their music. And I think metal and classical music really have a strong bond because they both genres of music really look to kind of maximize the potential of their instruments. So I think that I think that would be a fantastic collaboration. If I could go back in time and collaborate with like Celtic Frost or something like that, I think that would be, I think that would really be fantastic. So
that's not what I expected, but very interesting.
No. Well, I studied in Cleveland, Ohio, which is kind of a big metal hub. So I really got into a lot of different genres of metal. And I even actually did a concert in Ottawa with violinist Rachel Barton Pine, who is also a huge metalhead and a world-renowned classical violinist, but she actually has her own metal band where she plays violin, and she also really follows the metal scene. And Montreal was actually voted the number one, you could say the, or like a metal city, because they have a huge music festival here for metal music. So I think that probably the other genre of music I relate closely to is definitely metal, and I think that there's been a lot of kind of collaborations between the two genres that have really opened up my ears to it.
Amazing. Well, I look forward to someday hearing your metal collaboration coming up.
Mark Jokic with Celtic Frost, get the band back together.
Keep the fingers crossed. So just a few last questions before we finish it up here, Mark. What do you think drives you to keep making music, and where does that fire come from?
It really comes from the audiences, you know, playing music that, first of all, I love, and then hearing feedback from audience members that, you know, either, you know, had have their own liking of music and then rediscovered something because I played it and ended up really liking it, makes it all worthwhile. Because I remember when my friends or my family would introduce me to music, and I was like, oh, this is like the greatest thing. It's like you discovered something unique and special that you could enjoy, well, nowadays, anytime you want, with audio playback, CD, MP3, vinyl, whatever you like to listen to. So definitely audience reaction to music is, which, you know, really keeps me performing and, you know, wanting to introduce music to audiences, especially interesting programming, things like that. So yeah.
And if you were going to give one piece of advice to young artists here in Nova Scotia who are just now applying for their first Talent Trust scholarships, what would you what would you say as they embark on their career?
Enjoy, like, if you do get financial assistance, enjoy having that feeling of not having to think about paying tuition or struggling with something financial, and really concentrate on your music. You know, it's that I think the Nova Scotia Talent Trust is really there to help and to kind of ease those concerns that some people might have. So really, really enjoy that feeling and really use the opportunity to really love and concentrate on what you do. I think that in a lot of successful trades and a lot of successful career paths, you know, people really, really love what they do. So really kind of get lost in that obsession with what it is you're doing and, you know, put the time into it and try to rediscover it for different reasons. You know, listen to lots of music, play lots of music, and, you know, keep doing what you love doing, because that's definitely what I did, even if it sometimes feels like you're doing it sort of blindly or without really thinking it through. Sometimes you really just have to embrace it and go for it. And, you know, I think that's the passion of music. I think people who write music, composers, or who write any kind of music, really go into it with that mindset. And I think it's up to the musician to also do that.
That's really great advice. Well, thank you for taking the time out of your busy schedule to speak with me today, Mark. It was really interesting chatting with you.
It's been a great morning. I love doing this.
Perfect. So I'm going to play one more piece of music. I'm going to play Sweet Thing, a duo performance with yourself and Beverly Johnson. Thank you so much, Mark.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for listening to the Artist Spotlight presented by the Nova Scotia Talent Trust. For more information, or if you're an artist who might want to apply to the Talent Trust, go to www.nstalenttrust.ns.ca. or follow us on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram at NS Talent Trust. Special thanks to CIOE and our producer Ron James, as well as Music Nova Scotia. And our theme music is The Great Karoo by Will Fisher.